Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
But if you're working in Agile, you're going to want to find those designers who can have a mental picture, who can draw out the flow, but who can go work in sprints, who can design what's coming next in those small increments without losing the whole journey and without losing sight of, you know, where you're aiming for. But I do feel that design has to be part of the Agile team. They have to work in conjunction.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for leaders of growing software engineering teams. I'm Aaron Syme, here with my co-host, David Alfaro. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing fine. I'm surviving the second hurricane in a row. All good. Internet's
the
good.
Second... Yeah. Okay, well, as long as the internet's good, then we're okay.
That's Costa Rica.
In today's episode, we're going to speak with a good friend of ours, also from Costa Rica, and colleague, longtime leader in our team, Mariana Lopez. She's going to talk with us about how to hire and manage for UX and design roles. David, you and I spent a bit of time in the opening of this episode praising Mariana. She's been such a, you know, crucial leader in our team, and we both have so much respect for the work that she does. What did you think about this conversation today? What's something you want our listeners to look out for?
Well, there are a lot of things. I mean, first of all, you will learn from a very intelligent, I would say she's a thought leader in the industry, mm-hmm. UX, definitely. So you will learn a lot out of this episode. Some details besides the knowledge regarding UX, how do you integrate that with Agile? And you will discover that she and I, when we're working together in the same teams, we found a way to make it work brilliantly. So you will learn how to do it. But I think that the most personal thing out of this episode is the thing that I wanted to say at the end.
Yeah, our recording cut off at the end of this, you'll see. Here's your chance, to say what you wanted to say before your internet dropped from the hurricane.
Right. So it is the incredible results you get when you can put together in a room multidisciplinary people that are actually brilliant.
Yes.
Really yes. Brilliant. The results that you see. So in this case, Mariana with her UX superpowers, and then myself and my team, and then you leading the conversation with the clients. So when you put that, the magic that happens when you have the right people in the right roles, just producing value, that's the thing I wanted to say at the end. It is a spectacle to behold. It's really nice.
Absolutely.
So, and you will see that. You will see that in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely over the last decade of, you know, some of my fondest memories of all of us working together, and the most professionally invigorating moments of us working together have always come after one of those on-site visits with a client where we're working on the technical walking skeleton and Mariana's working on the interaction design. And as the company has grown, you know, we individually don't do those things together in the way that we used to, our teams do, but it was still those, you know, anytime you get a group of really smart expert people together in that, like you said, it was just, I always came back from that just really invigorated and excited about the work that we do and just passionate about working with our clients. And I think when you have, when I think that's one of the benefits of getting really strong UX roles into your team is that because they have that empathy, that focus on their customers, that on the users that Mariana talks about in this episode, I think it really brings a lot to the team as a whole. You know, those of us with a programming background maybe just get a little too focused on the technology at times. And so we really benefit from having those UX roles in our team, as well as the end users of the product we're building.
Absolutely. And she also talks about, and we talk about, but she mainly about how to hire.
UX
people. That's gold.
Yeah. Stay tuned. Yeah. And exactly. I was telling her after we finished recording today's episode that I personally benefited from that conversation a lot, because I think you and I had the benefit of always delegating hiring designers and UX people to Mariana. So we weren't in those conversations in the same way we are in conversations hiring developers. She was able to do that. So I got to learn a little bit about her magic and the questions that she asks in those conversations. So I really learned a lot from this conversation today too. All right, well, let's get to our interview with Mariana Lopez. Mariana Lopez is Chief Operating Officer at WebRTC Ventures, which is the division of Agility Feet that focuses on building live video applications. She was one of our first team members at Agility Feet over 10 years ago. And before she was COO, she worked in many roles, including project lead, scrum master, UX designer, and director of products. She holds a master in human-computer interaction design from Carnegie Mellon University, and a bachelor in computer science from the Universidad de Costa Rica. Mariana has also been a professor in user experience at the Universidad de Costa Rica and the Universidad Veritas, and she's spoken at conferences in the U.S. and Latin America about user experience. Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, Mariana.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
It's great to have you here. I know David and I have been looking forward to this conversation for quite a while. Our first interview on the Scaling Tech Podcast with a member of our own team to Agility Feet. And so it only makes sense that we would start with you as the longest, or at least potentially, there's some debate, the longest serving member of the Agility Feet team, one of our very original team members, and certainly one of the very most important people in the company and most important people to the success of what we've been able to do over the last 10 years. So it's awesome to have you here.
Thank you, Aaron. And I do want to take the opportunity to say that I was the first, of course.
Well, unless we end up interviewing Andrea at some point, there will be no argument about that on the podcast. You were the first.
I think that we can certainly say that Mariana and I are the oldest inception of Agility Feet.
At a company age level, yes. Let's be clear, not in actual lifetime age. That would be me.
Right. That would be you.
I am the oldest.
So the biggest, you're the oldest, but this is the oldest relationship.
The oldest relationship, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, and maybe let's start there a little bit before we, you know, our topic today is to talk about how to hire and manage for UX and design roles. But let's talk for a moment first kind of about how we all met and started working together a little bit about that journey. David, how did you meet Mariana originally before we all started working together?
I met her in Costa Rica. There was a company called Roundbox. And one day she came back. This person came back from a master's degree. She came back to Costa Rica. So I met her there for the first time. As any first impression, it was not remarkable, but...
I could not see the look on Mariana's face that she just gave to V.
Are you telling me that I was remarkable to you? I don't think so.
I am always remarkable. What are you talking about?
but something that I noticed very quickly, because very soon we started to interact in in our teams, how was Scrum Master? So that's why I was able to interact with her with some frequency. And the first things I noticed is she was extremely brilliant, which is not common. I mean, that kind of brilliance. And then the other thing is, part of that brilliance is that she, every time that Marina speaks, every word has a purpose. She's very precise, very concise, and very purpose. There is a very focused purpose in everything that she says. So if you combine that brilliance and that focus, then you get great value, and she is a very good facilitator person. Mm-hmm. So between she and I, although very indirectly, we were able to deal with a lot of chaos that we were suffering in Roundbox. I mean, it was very accidental, very incidental, but I had the chance to meet an incredible person. That is very rare you have the chance to find someone like this in your lifetime. So I had that impression very quickly, not first, but very quickly. And then I met you, Erin, and then I heard that Roundbox was closing Costa Rica operations, and then I said I need Mariana in my life. So I brought her here. I mean to this wonderful thing that is Agility Fit and Web Artist Adventures. So that's the story.
Awesome.
That's how it started.
All right, Mariana, you wanted to just, is this your chance to dispute any of that?
No, I agree with David. We were working closely. It was tough working in different time zones for sure. And then the company decided to close operations in Costa Rica, and that was a blessing in disguise because it gave us the opportunity to venture out and do a little bit different. UX in Costa Rica was really new, and I was a little bit scared, and I was happy that I was able to continue in the field and doing branching out a little bit more than interaction design, whereas where I started, and trying to think more about the holistic product and venturing into other areas of UX. So it was a great opportunity, and thankfully it put me on the path to working with both of you and growing Agility Feet and growing WebRTC Ventures, which I think are both amazing companies, and working with people that are passionate, that understand how to work, that don't need to be micromanaged. And also, like, even now we work in different time zones, and it's never been as painful as it was when we were starting back then. So
yeah, definitely a lot has changed. We've all learned a lot for sure. The first weekend that I came down to Costa Rica where we worked together, you were the first member of our team, but probably a few weeks later officially than I actually wanted, because I remember that we were working on one of our first clients. We were at David's home in Costa Rica, and I was about to leave, I think, for the airport, you know, sort of the end of the trip. And I had been saying to David, you know, Mariana's awesome. Like, how do we get her to like commit to working with us? Like, we gotta lock this down. I think he may have said something like, well, you know, why don't you talk to her? And so on the way out, I'm grabbing my bags. I'm like, Mariana, do you have a moment? Like, can you go ahead and just quit your job and come work with us full time? Like, we would really love to have you in the team. I know this is our first project, but, you know, we'll make this work. And it was pretty funny because to me, because you were very correctly cautious and kind of said, well, let's see how it goes a little bit first. How about that, right? And you didn't quit your job immediately to join us, but you did eventually. And obviously, it's been over 10 years now. So very glad it all worked out. But yeah, it is funny thinking back to how we all initially met and those first impressions. So mine were very positive. I guess your first impressions of me must have been a little less positive, a little crazy gringo. Maybe I'm not ready to work with these
positive,
guys.
Super positive.
I mean, I have to say, I am very grateful that she gave at least, that she entertained the possibility of working with us at first. I am very grateful, complimented because I like to think, and maybe she doesn't recognize this or wouldn't accept this, is that she found a couple of guys with a set of values that she could respect.
Yeah.
And that she would feel respected.
Who was that?
I suspect that was an important part of the deal. It is like, we saw you, Mariana, and we said, this is your field. We will have the reins of the things that you do the best, and you do it. Do it your way. We respect you, and so that respect, and that is part of our DNA. I mean, we respect talent, we respect brilliance. I think that may click. I hope that yeah. was happening.
I'd like to think so, and I think certainly it's across our team that's recognized, and that's why Mariana's become such a great leader within our team and within the company. But let's back up a little bit, Mariana, and start to transition a little towards our topic today around UX and hiring and managing for those roles. Start with a little bit more about your journey. You started out studying software development. How did you move into user experience, and then maybe how did that help you in moving into management?
Yeah, definitely. So for me, it was in when I was in college, in the software requirements class. It just felt like we were getting handed requirements, and I kept disagreeing with my professor on which was the best way to implement things. And so the requirements would be very strict in how they were written, and they would be like, you need to place a button here, you need to have this interaction do this. And my mind going like it goes is, but what if there was no button? Or what if the interaction was different? Or what if we displayed a table instead of a list? And I just asked those questions. And she was like, no, the requirements are written like that. That's the way it has to be implemented. You will get a 0 if you don't implement requirements like they are. And I'm very stubborn. And so I did not implement the requirements as they were written. I implemented them better. we had a lot of debate. It got very heated. I did not end up failing that class. But it got me started on a path where I was thinking there has to be a better way to test and to prove and to design these products than somebody in a dark room imagining these are the requirements, this is how it has to be written. And it got me thinking and investigating, and I really stumbled upon the Masters in Human Computer Interaction, and I read it and I was like, oh, this is it. This is amazing. This is the way software should be built. It should be around the people that are going to be using it, and it should be built on goals and on jobs that are going to be accomplished. And that got me onto the path of where I am today. And I think being in computer science, it doesn't come naturally to be empathetic or to think about people. You're more used to being in front of the computer and, having a computer do whatever you want it to do is amazing. But it got me to being a little thinking more about the people that are going to be using it, and in general, thinking more about people and making people's lives better. And I think that really not only helped in designing better products, but also in being a better manager and being able to relate to people in a way that you feel like a job, and the person that's working with you, both of your lives have to be better because of that. And if not, it's not a working relationship. At least for me.
So those feelings of those skills of empathy that don't naturally come to developers that brought you towards UX also have helped you out a lot in management.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. At least it's made me very conscious of the fact. Maybe I had them all along. It was just not something that I had prioritized when I was in high school or in college. And later on, I learned that, you know, that's the most important thing at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's another great, great characteristic about Mariana is she's value focused. You are value focused, Mariana. It's like, it's I enjoyed every time we were in a heated conversation with a client and you were cut the chase and say, no, this is not valuable. This is, this is not helping. This is not helping anyone, right? I mean, that is very good. Is your value centered person. You strive to deliver value. And I like that very much because something that is a big problem in this area of work is that we forget that. Mm-hmm. Like we programmers, we just want to be in a room isolated of the world, just talking with the computer, and the only language we understand is the language that we're programming in, not the human language, because they are not humans. We are the humans. So that kind of thing, and this focus about value, you know, we exist because we deliver value. I love that. It's just fantastic.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too how that I think that aspect of your UX training, the way that you think, Mariana, is helpful in those client conversations too, right? Because as David says, as technologists, as developers, we often are more excited about the technology that we're working with and getting cool things to work together. Our customers often are excited about a whole list of features that they think their customers value, but their users may or may not value that. And sometimes that's a lot of conflict. And I think definitely, you know, there's definitely an aspect of your training or personality that has made you much more effective than David or I over the years at going to a customer and saying, you don't need that, and getting the customer to agree that they don't need that. That's a superpower you have that David and I don't have. And we've definitely privately said before, like, send Mariana to talk to that customer. She'll make them agree with what we want because they won't listen to us. How did you develop that superpower? Is that an inherent thing, or is that part of UX, and how do you draw that distinction between what a user may value and what, you know, say a customer, the way we think of it, like what a product owner may value, let's say, versus what an actual user may value?
Yeah, I think I am naturally persuasive. That is a personality trait, but that's also something that you should be able to look for when you're hiring somebody in UX. It's, are they facilitators? Are they able to understand the underlying why and communicate that back, and then understand what is the value that they're trying to create and be empathetic with their users and try to find that bridge between what the business is trying to deliver and what users are trying to say. And I think that persuasion comes from understanding a little bit of users' mental model, how they work, what are their jobs to be done. And so if you have that knowledge, you're able to be very, very persuasive. And if you've learned to be a facilitator, to understand how to walk people through your thought process, how to express your ideas, and how to validate them with data that you've gathered and researched, then your arguments become almost, you know, bulletproof, and people tend to be able to agree with that, especially when they're looking out to build the best thing, and you can prove to them through qualitative and quantitative data that that's what they want. So I think it's a little bit of a mix of both. I chose to be on the side of knowledge. So when I research users, when I observe their behaviors, it gives me like the talking points that I want, but I'm also naturally persuasive, I think.
How do you look for that in an interview? I mean, I think of, like, you know, Mariana, you and I have talked about like hiring salespeople before, and how, you know, I struggle because if I'm hiring a salesperson and they do a good job selling me on themselves, then I assume they're a good salesperson. And many times that turns out not to actually be the case, right? So somebody could be persuasive to you in an interview, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're actually persuasive in a situation of working with a customer, or that they're good at facilitating a conversation with a customer or users. How do you look for those skills in an interview?
So I think it's there's two ways, and it depends. It really depends on the kind of UX person that you're looking for. And I'm gonna backtrack a little here and talk about the different kinds of roles, because when we talk about UX, you know, there's this whole spectrum, and more it's becoming super divided, so that you can find the right person at the right time. I come from a little bit ways back where there was a UX team of one. I think that's changed a little bit, and it also changes in what you're looking for. So there's, and I'm going to simplify in like five big categories, but there's little cross sections in between. But there's the user researcher. This person is the person that's going to establish user empathy. They're going to be able to understand the whole vision of your product. They are great to help when you're just starting out, or when you want to build something new within the product. They are great at, you know, interviews, usability testing, understanding usage data, those kinds of things, and strategizing with you on what are the outcomes that you want to bring to your product. There's the information architect. This person is the person that's in charge of mapping the mental models, trying to organize, identify a hierarchy in your application, establish a navigation, a content strategy, simplifying the data, making sure that it's organized in understandable chunks for users. Then there's the interaction designer. And like I mentioned, this is sort of the in-between where I started my career, but it is the person that does sketches or wireframes and brings out the concepts, the strategy, the information architecture, and puts it together, brings it to life in a series of screens and flows. There's the visual designer who makes it appealing, or the product designer. They add in color, graphics, typography, branding. You know, this is Danny. He will bring wireframes to life, and he'll give them depth and dimension and affordance. And, you know, that's what you're really looking for in the visual designer. And then there's the UI engineer. And typically they weren't considered part of UX, but now they're being brought in. And this is the person that will create the front end technology and bring it to life. A lot of times UXers that were starting out would be put off or turned off if you would say like, oh, and do you code HTML? Because you sort of felt like they were intertwining the roles. But more and more, the UI engineer has been carving out that space in the UX, because they also need to understand and empathize with users and be able to put forth what has been placed in non-interactive components into interactive components that behave and act like they should. So when we're talking about how do you evaluate, or how do you look for certain skills that you want, you might want to ask for a portfolio. And if you're looking at the three right roles that I mentioned, so the interaction designer, the visual designer, or the UI engineer, a portfolio is a great way to talk to them, because they will be able to showcase what they've done. And it's not so much the deliverables, because we all know those are made as part of a team. It's how they can explain to you the why, and how they can bring in the story and empathize with the users, and try to understand what was it that they loved about this project. Can they critique their own work? And can they facilitate? Can they explain to you, hey, this is why we made this decision. Does the business case that they're showcasing you make sense? If we're talking about the user researcher and the information architecture, you're still going to be looking for those skills, but it's going to be a little bit different. You're going to want to talk to them about their process. Did they talk to customers? Did they question the flow? Do they ideate and come up with different solutions? How do they talk about business? Are they a strategic thinking? Do they work in cross-functional teams? A lot of times what we see with user researchers or information architects is that they're not as exposed to the rest of the team, and so they are not able to work with them with development or with product. And you want to be able to find those individuals that understand the users, but that are also able to bring that empathy and bring that knowledge into the team and who are going to be able to evangelize what they do, what they plan. And so you're going to be wanting to look for people that are great team members that are, that listen, but that also are able to translate what you've told them into concise information and be able to tell the story. So you, regardless of anywhere in the spectrum that you're looking for, UXers are people that are good, great storytellers, because to be able to empathize with users and persuade their point and make sure that you're driving and keeping them in the center of what you're building, you're going to need somebody that tells the story, that's interested in the why, and that can showcase that. If you're looking for researchers, how do they do that in their process? If you're looking for interaction designers or visual designers, how do they showcase that in their portfolios?
That's great. I'm persuaded. You
can I have when I do interviews for software developers, you know that, Mariana. I mean, that's my superpower. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, when I one important piece of the interview. For me, and I want to hear your how do you do this? This part of when I ask behavioral interview questions. I mean, just to give context to the audience, behavioral interview questions are those kind of questions where we ask candidates to share examples of specific situations they've been in when they had to use certain skills, particularly soft skills, especially, or to explain how they navigated certain types of scenarios. That is very important to me. I mean, because I can navigate a lot of things about, I mean, a lot of things related to the personality, about how, if I need a kind of person that needs to be assertive, a kind of person that is going to be, focused, that kind of thing. So would you do something like that?
I do. So I always ask about process. I ask some technical questions, and then I always ask them, tell me about a time that something got built that you didn't think was the best experience. Mm-hmm. And then I want to understand why they felt it got built, even though it wasn't the best experience. What did they try to do to persuade, and how did they know it wasn't the best experience, and what they did afterward? We've all been in situations as UX designers where, you know, budget restrictions, time restrictions, development restrictions, right? What you wanted couldn't be done. And so how did you navigate those constraints to come up with something that you were at least, you know, comfortable putting out to production? Or even if that didn't happen, how did you fix that later? And I tend to look for people that say, I understood that business wanted this. I tried to push back with these kinds of informations. But then in the end, this is what got built. This is how we changed it afterwards. Instead of people that say, oh yeah, I put up my designs, but they chose to do something different. You know, those are the people that you don't want as a team player, because in the end, it's going to happen, right? Sometimes what you design is not going to be what comes out there. I mean, honestly, unless I'm really lucky, most of the time that's not it. Really unlucky. That's not how it happens, and it evolves. And you test it with users and you learn some things different. And that's what I want. I want designers and UX that can take critique, that can learn, and that can continue to grow and build upon what was already done.
I love that. I love that question for a variety of reasons, the behavioral answers, the teamwork insights that it gives you. But I also really like it because I think in, you know, most of our listeners to this podcast are engineering managers. They probably came from a technical background as opposed to a UX background. And so I think a real challenge for them is how do I assess if someone is going to be a good designer? And certainly I can look at their portfolio and, you know, decide if it visually appeals to me or not, but I don't necessarily have the expertise to know if they really were using the right techniques or anything like that. But I really like that question because it gets to a key element that regardless of their background, any manager should be interested in as they're adding UX to the team, which is like their pragmatism, their ability to work well in the team, because we all, and it's a type of question really we should be asking software developers too. You know, tell me about a time that you had to launch a product to production with features you didn't like, or bugs you wanted to fix, or enhancements you wanted to make first, right? Because we all have to launch things and deploy them in a, you know, less than ideal state. And certainly that's true in the UX space as well. So I love that.
Right. And if you wait until your product is perfect, you've waited too long, right?
Right. Exactly. You've been beat to the market for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned something to think about. And I think when you're trying to decide how to hire UX, one of the things that you should ask yourself is, should this be an in-house UX team or should this be an agency? And I think that is really important depending on your UX maturity. Do you feel that if somebody came on board and they were going to be able to persuade and influence the decision, are you ready to invest in the time it takes to ideate, to create with designs? Then you might be in a good place to hire a UX. If you feel that it's going to be really hard to persuade, if you feel that you just need the designs, then maybe you should think about first using a UX agency, trying to understand what they do, prepping and priming the different stakeholders, trying to understand what that profession does, how does research work, how does interaction design work? Why is it important to map the user journey, to understand jobs to be done and roles? And once you get that, then you can start thinking about building your UX team in-house. But I think it's really important that one UX is not going to change the company's vision. It has to be a company that understands and values UX, and then you can bring in one person to continue to build your team. UX only works if you're able to change the outcomes of what a company is trying to do, and not only if it's output driven. If you're only producing the screens, it's not going to change the UX. You need to understand the whole process. And I think that's really important because sometimes we feel like, okay, I'm just going to hire a UX designer and then my application is all of a sudden going to be usable. And I think there's a little bit more in the background of how you're thinking about what gets built, how it gets built, and how you test it after it gets built that is part of UX, but is often overlooked. And sometimes we feel dissatisfaction because that person didn't deliver those unreasonable expectations.
I really like that idea of using a external UX agency to train your internal stakeholders, which brings me to a question too of kind of how you scale these sorts of things, right? So for our listeners who are you know, maybe they have one visual designer now, and that's the only role here that they have, or maybe they have one UX person, but they don't really understand the differences yet between, you know, you listed, I think, five roles. If I wrote them down properly here, there was user researcher, information architect, interaction designer, visual designer, and UI engineer. Yeah, I think in our team's history, we were really fortunate in that, you know, you could do probably four out of those, I would say, everything right but UI engineer, right? I think you would push back on me. There were times when I would say, hey, you know, Danny, our visual designer, is too busy. Can't you do this, Mariana? And you'd be like, no, that's not what I do. And I didn't, you know, always appreciate that, right? And we were also fortunate that Danny could do visual designer and UI engineer type of things together. Those aren't always the same person. So we were able to condense these five roles really into the two of you because of how talented both of you are and how much you overlap. Most teams probably are not going to have that advantage. So how, you know, if you have just a visual designer now and you want to move in the direction of these five roles, how do you get from zero to five? is there an order or priority, or is there a way to find those gems that can span across all the roles?
No, I think what you mentioned is really important, and I think it will depend on where you are in your process, right? If you are trying to get up off the ground and you need to understand the motivation, the concept validation, how to piece together your application, you're definitely going to need somebody to help you with the user research and the interaction design. The visual design and the UI engineering can come later, right? If you're at a point where instead you have a lot of data, you've been able to interpret it, and what you want to do is redesign your application, you're going to need that interaction designer. So I would start there. It is true. I think Danny is great, a visual designer and a UI engineer, and I've been able to do user research and interaction design. I think with bigger products, you're going to need more specialized team members, because the time that you need to dedicate to, for example, exploratory research and design is not the same as you want to do with generative design, which is when you have the concept and you just want to go through the process. So it will depend on how big your product is and how much time you want to dedicate to it, right? If you have one very small product that is very focused, you might get away with a UX, a generalist that could do a little bit of research, a little bit of interaction design, and some visual design. But more and more, I think as you grow, you're going to want people that are doing the exploratory and people that are focused on the day-to-day and bringing the features to life in your application.
You also bring up a point there about the difference between early stage of a product design versus maybe the day-to-day and, you know, the ongoing maintenance and continual work. So that leads me to ask about how do these different roles work within a development team? Let's say, you know, you're past that initial design phase, you've deployed to production, you're trying to, you know, if you're a scrum team, you're trying to deploy more features to production every 2 weeks, or a Kanban team maybe deploying features every single day. How do you work these UX processes into the cadence of that agile team?
Yeah, and I think it's really important. More and more agile development is taken into account design, but it wasn't really when it was built, right? And you can see in the meetings and the terminology, it's mostly that scrum master role and the development team. And design has sort of had to say like, hey, I'm also here.
We're here too. Yeah,
I'm here too.
Before you keep going, Marina, I want to give a little bit more of color to this question, because I want to give my perspective first. The reason I fell in love with the work you do so easily is that two reasons. The first reason is before I met you, I went to, like 2 years ago, I went to this seminar from Jacob Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he sold me on that. I mean, I met Usability for the first time there, and believe it or not, I did usability test alone because I wasn't able to find anyone to do that. So I learned in a very rustic way how to do it, and so it was very painful. But I recognized the value that very easily, and I wasn't a Scrum Master, so and at the same time I was. Recognizing as well that in the community, the relationship between UX and Scrum, and we are talking many years ago, right? So
yeah.
The relationship between UX and Scrum wasn't clear. And I was just baffled because it is obvious. It was obvious for me. It was so obvious. So I didn't understand the conflict or the discussion. And so when I saw you, when I saw your work, so it was an easy sell for me. So it was very easy, but the most important thing for me was that I didn't have to explain that to you. That was fantastic. That was magical, because then I could interact with you, you could interact with me, Very, again, very focused, very precise conversations. You will get it. I could get it. So that was very important for us at the beginning. Very important for us.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really good point. And I think there are different kinds of designers. There's going to be designers that want to have everything pixel perfect by the time that development takes it into completion, and they'll want to have, you know, the whole application pixel perfect before development starts. And that's a great way and mentality. But if you're working in Agile, you're going to want to find those designers who can have a mental picture, who can draw out the flow, but who can go work in sprints, who can design what's coming next, and those small increments without losing the whole journey and without losing sight of, you know, where you're aiming for. But I do feel that design has to be part of the Agile team. They have to work in conjunction. And as I've read and understood a little bit more, the methodology that I like the most is dual track Agile, where you have part of your UX team working on exploratory designs, the next iteration of what's going to come, and they feed your general Scrum team in their regular track of Agile of the discovery that they've done of the next feature to build. And so you're going to be working part of your time in an exploratory, evaluative research that also happens in a sprint cadence and hopefully in an Agile way. But it's going to be feeding your Agile team, and it's going to be feeding that interaction designer who's working as part of the Scrum team and creating designs. You know that I like to say like two sprints ahead, right? Because when you're creating that skeleton for an application, you're taking the time building out what the architecture should be. I feel that one of those sprints should be same research, trying to understand the mental model, trying to map out the whole customer journey, and then getting one sprint ahead in design so that not pixel perfect, and we're going to have to make some changes along the way and, you know, compromise, but you're able to bring an idea when you're refining stories, when you're pointing them, when you're adding them to the backlog. And for me, that's the best way it works, right? I've been in teams where people say, oof, that list is going to take us 3 weeks to build. And you look at it and you're like, oh, I had sketched something out that was completely different. Let's try that. And sometimes that'll take a day to build. And you're like, there was no real user data to back that up. Let's go test it. Let's go see if it works. And sometimes I'll have to come back and say like, oh no, those 3 weeks were worth it. But you know, it was a different investment at that time because we were sure. And I think that's really valuable in Agile, right? It's, you don't have to get it perfect the first time. You have to get value, and you have to be able to iterate. And this is where design shines, because if you're following the methodology, if you're doing usability testing, if you're listening to your users, the more that you can put out there that you can test, that you can understand, that has strong foundations. I'm not talking about, you know, whims that come up from time to time. You're going to get better and better at building that product. And on that note, I think being part of the team has also an important aspect, and something that you should look for a person that you're hiring is, are they willing to evangelize UX? Are they willing to understand how important it is that it's not only the designer who sees the value in it, but also the Scrum Master, the product owner, their developers? Are they learning about their UX? I love it because sometimes I'm in conversations and I'll hear somebody that's not the UX say, but why are we doing that? Do users really want that? And I'll feel like, why are they questioning me? But honestly, I'll feel proud because I'll be like, yeah, that's the team members that I want to create. And that's the team members I want to work with, because when everybody is thinking about the outcome and where we want to go, we're going to build better products in the end. So,
yeah. I want to say something about that. I think part of the magic again is, an important question here, that it is, or an important topic is, how you get into the cadence. And you mentioned something very important, Mariana, is that it's better when the UX team is 2 weeks ahead. But the way that we did it, if you remember, and this, I mean, the projects that we did together were very fun, because what I would do with you is that I would take all the developers, and I will create with them a walking skeleton in the first two sprints. And while I was herding cats doing that, you were working on the first two sprints of these specifications of the designs,
the wireframes,
yeah. All of that, talking with users, doing all these brainstorming. So while I was just making the technical brainstorming, dealing with all the risk and trying to have a very good walking skeleton, you will dealing with the other side of the problem is hearing the cats front, but the cats were the user and the users, the users. And by the time I will finish the walking skeleton, you were ready, and that was fantastic. So you were ready with the user stories, with the wireframes, and all the explanation and all the justification. So we were ready to roll. So that was so good. That was very good. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that process really works. If I would add in more research throughout the process. So one of the things that I've learned is sometimes we were in a hurry to get out there, but after it got out there, we weren't doing enough testing, enough bringing back that iteration. And I think that's something that has, you know, proven to me that it's really important. We've worked with all kinds of clients and with teams, and sometimes the same is true for product owners, right? They want their product to be perfect before it gets used. And I think that steals a little bit of that UX magic, because if you don't see it in action, it's really hard to retrofit and to understand what went wrong and how you can improve it. And this is where I think UX maturity is important, because if you have a UX researcher and an interaction designer at the same time, you're going to want to be able to do that testing to be able to bring it back. And then you're going to have to take the risk and release your product a little bit early so that user research has enough users to be able to test with and enough explorations to be able to do. And we've talked a lot about, you know, web and mobile design, but as we get more and more into tech and what can be done, you're also going to want to find UX designers that are willing to understand and research different modes of interaction. So virtual reality, augmented reality, voice, touch, all of these, UX for APIs, service design, right? All of these are important when you think about what you're trying to build and how you're trying to build it. And when you push the frontier on technology, sometimes you forget to bring all that knowledge that you've learned. And I just want to remind that there are people that are specializing in voice UX, that are specializing in VR and augmented reality. And when you're dealing with that frontier of technology, it's even more important that you get those experiences right and those interactions right. So when you're looking for people that you're building together, do they have the knowledge, or are they willing to take the plunge and learn and understand and bring those same principles that they've been used to in web and mobile design into new interaction designs?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think and part of the work that you do in leading the team at Weber TC Ventures and that the clients of you know that company value is that you do have and our team there has that UX experience of what works well in video chat applications, right? So it is a specialized type of UX, a specialized application of it, right? Understanding how the interaction patterns there are different than, you know, standard web design perhaps.
Yeah, and for example, like something that you learn the hard way is that it's not a standard experience. So for example, when you're designing for a web, you can predict If I click this button, this is what's going to happen, and these are the objectives that a user has, then I can design for that. In WebRTC, as you learn, you know, the internet goes down, somebody accidentally mutes their microphone. How do you get all those interactions working when things happen unexpectedly? Yeah. And that's one of the things that we've had to adapt. And you only see it when you're like trying to understand the frustration in people when they're using WebRTC, and you're like, well, I'm here, but I'm not hearing the other.
It's a very dynamic experience. Yeah, yeah. It's definitely not a static web page being presented. Yeah, it's a very dynamic interaction experience. Yeah, I want to also briefly call out something that when you were both talking about, you know, kind of the walking skeleton and the sprint zero of the technical architecture going in parallel to Mariana working with the client on interaction design. That was also a great opportunity for us to work on site with our clients too. And so often, you know, our work over the last 10 plus years has been virtually all remote. But the times when we've often really benefited, and our clients have really benefited from getting together in person, were those initial phases where, you know, we would start off the a week or two together with an understanding of the technical objectives and enough there that David and the team could go and start implementing the technical walking skeleton in parallel to you working with them on the interaction design and the application flow. And it was amazing how much work you could get done in a week or two setting like that in a hotel conference room or wherever, to go from a customer who only has an idea to them getting really excited about seeing it start to come together and see some of the technical concepts being proven out in parallel to seeing the design elements coming together and becoming a reality for them. So, you know, these days we could do all of that remote too, but now with some business travel and returning as the pandemic eases, you know, and for companies who haven't been doing remote work for 10 years like we have, they've only been doing it the last couple of years by necessity. That's a great opportunity to pull people together as in those early exploratory phases and build that camaraderie that you're then going to use throughout the rest of the project.
Yeah, I think that rapport is very important, not only like with your client, but also with your development team, trying to understand where they're coming from and what they want to achieve and how you can frame things that will help them understand why we're designing the harder list to build, or why we're taking some more time to test it out and to build it. I think when you meet people in person, those bonds are easier to form. It doesn't mean that remote you can't. We've done it. I worked with amazing people that I have never met face to face, but definitely that crash course into like 2 weeks of working together and figuring it out really does help. I think the same thing would be true for your users, right? One of the most experiences that I've loved is when I get to go and observe people in their natural offices, in their spaces, at their work, their home, because there's so much context that you lose, right? And the more context you lose, you can still gain insights. And, you know, we're talking, but my environment is a little bit different than the window that you see here. It's the same, right? When you can interview people, you can establish better rapport, you can empathize better, and that will make you a better designer as well. I remember some of the early designs that we did was for a construction company, and I got to go and meet all these construction guys and understand. I didn't know anything about construction, but at the end, like, I could point and I could tell you exactly where everything was. You know, that's the magic of being in person. Doesn't mean that I wouldn't have learned about construction remotely, but it would have been definitely a lot more different.
Yeah, absolutely. And that client, I know exactly who you're speaking of, and the company went on to be very successful, has been sold. And still, when I see the founder of that company on occasion, he still remembers that time that you all got together with some of his early home builder clients in a like the dining room of a bed and breakfast, I think it was, working together with a whole bunch of sticky notes and working through those ideas. And yeah, it was an incredibly important experience for his business at that stage and the product that they were building.
Yeah, sometimes with research and with UX, the intangibles are really hard to quantify how much they're going to change or impact your process. But being able to understand the user, being able to map out what was important for them and what they were trying to achieve, that, you know, short span of research carried us through for like 4 months of things that we wanted to build that we knew were going to hit exactly the mark. And I think that's what you want to be able to look for, is somebody who will be able to make a case for doing that research and then will then use that knowledge and synthesize it so that the rest of your team can use it and make it powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. To no one's surprise, in this call, is so much what we could talk about, so much experience that you've built up over the last more than decade now, and so many shared experiences we've had working together as a leadership team too. Really appreciate your insights today, Mariana. Is there anything else that you wanted to make sure we covered in this conversation? Any tidbits or places you would recommend people go for additional thoughts or anything on UX?
I mean, there are so many books that you can go. I think that the important bits is understanding where you're at in your UX maturity. Is it a good moment to have somebody come in and become part of your team? Do you need some coaching and understanding of where you want to go? And then finally, is that UX is not only about one person or one individual or a team that you're trying to hire. It should be a way of thinking and incorporating and making sure that you're designing for the user and for a journey, and that in the end, every single person that's a stakeholder in your product should try to understand and empathize that what you're trying to build will affect people's lives.
Yeah, user experience is a company value more than a job title.
Right.
Perhaps, right?
Yeah.
David, anything else you want to add in here as we wrap up?
Well, I think my takeaways are... I mean, it is a spectacle to behold when you have brilliant people working together. I have to say, I miss those moments, Mariana. I mean, where we were working together.
And I think David's camera froze up there. So that is a great closing note from David, that it is a spectacle to behold when you have brilliant people working with you. as we do working with you, Mariana, thank you so much for being, the great leader that you are on our team, as well on a broader scale than UX, as well as all of the value that you've brought to our team, our company's view of things, and our clients in UX, and just these words of wisdom that you've brought to our listeners today on how to hire and manage for UX and design roles. So thank you so much, Mariana.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Brought to you by agilityfeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally. For more information on today's episode and to submit your ideas for future guests, please visit scalingtechpod.com.